Welcome to today's episode. Before we dive in, a quick shout out to our new sponsor, AGL Information and Technology. If you're serious about staying ahead in broadband, infrastructure, AI, and everything shaping the digital ecosystem, AGL Information and Technology is your go-to source. We're bringing you cutting-edge news, insights from industry leaders, and practical knowledge on the trends and tech transforming our world. Make sure to check out aglinfotech.com for your weekly dose of thought leadership and stay empowered in our fast-evolving digital landscape. Now let's get started. Welcome to Closing the Digital Divide, the podcast dedicated to creating meaningful conversation and sharing valuable insights from industry leaders, policymakers, equipment manufacturers, and others on closing the digital divide. I'm your host, Charles Thomas, and together we explore policy, challenges, triumphs, and innovation solutions that are shaping the digital landscape. I am so excited to invite our next guest to the show. I met this gentleman several years ago when we were trying to close the digital divide here in Virginia. And I went to this event. It's probably my third or fourth event that I went to. And I saw this guy up on the stage speaking. And I was like, man, I got to go talk to that guy. And we met and talked and just had a great time. And I've really enjoyed times we've had together. And I think you guys are going to really, really be excited about what he has to say, what he's doing in his current position, and how they're working to close the digital divide. And I am really glad to welcome Claude Akins, who's the Chief Strategy Officer and Chief Legal Officer for NextLink Internet. Claude, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Charles. Very happy to be here, and thanks for having me. Things are going well. Things are going well.
Well, I tell you, it's almost like I can't get on LinkedIn without seeing something pop up about what you guys are doing down there, and that's awesome. You know, I've spent my entire career in trying to bring service, internet service, broadband service to rural communities, and you guys are. You guys are all stars in that field. And so before we get started, though, Claude, tell our audience a little bit about you, a little bit about your background. I mean, you're the person that really can talk about what's going on in our industry today. So,
no, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm currently kind of dual-hatted at NextLink with the titles of both Chief Strategy Officer and Chief Legal Officer. And those are sort of somewhat meaningless appellations that just basically mean I wear a lot of different hats. I work on our legal issues, government issues, grants, strategic partnerships, market development, and whatever else is cooking on any given day of the week. I've been doing that for a few years, and before that, I was the president and CEO of WISPO, which is where we met each other at one of those trade shows a few years back. In that role, I was very fortunate to be able to represent and advocate on behalf of I think we were up to about 1,000 members by the time I left, but you know, lots and lots of smaller companies that just got started out of a need for broadband in their community and just a desire to close that gap and to be able to tell those folks' stories to policymakers in DC and try to make their jobs a little bit better and their lives a little bit easier. Before that, I spent almost a decade at the FCC as an attorney by training. Please don't hold that against me. And so I was a baby attorney there right out of law school, and then held a bunch of different positions internally, including a couple of different senior leadership positions, as well as positions advising a couple of the political appointees on policy. So in sort of reverse chronological order, that's a little bit about my background and what makes me tick.
Awesome. Well, look, we're excited to talk to you. As I said earlier, you can barely look at a news feed without seeing something about NetSlink and what you guys are doing down there. So I want to really focus in on that part of it, being that you wear multiple hats. I'm sure you can address all the areas of excellence that you guys are involved with. So my first question to you is, how does NetSlink define its mission and strategic objectives in addressing the digital divide, and particularly in underserved and unserved rural communities across the United States?
Yeah, I mean, great question. At a very high level, it's just trying to do what others haven't, and that kind of presents itself in a variety of different ways, right? So, rural internet is hard, as I think you know personally, and yes, it is very easy to do something poorly when you're doing something that's hard. And so what we try to do is to provide people with great service using a variety of different technologies, and to do so with great customer service as well. And that's a pretty challenging mission because, as you well know, the infrastructure is very capital intensive to get it out of there. And then supporting it, the operating expenditures and customer support can also be pretty costly and time consuming as well. So trying to kind of marry those twin goals together, and to do so with integrity, to always do what's right, and to be transparent and forward leaning are just a couple of the things that we try to do to really, you know, not only just give rural folks great broadband, but to do so in a way that is good for them and their communities.
Awesome. Well, I've had the opportunity to work with a couple of your folks, Ebony. You know, she's a firebrand out there.
She's great. She's great.
Talk to us a little bit about how you guys engage with, you know, local municipalities out in rural areas. I know when we first got started, that's literally how I got started. I just went to the local meetings and said, you know, what are your challenges here? You know, how can we help? And also talk to us a little bit about the community partnerships, planning, permitting, implementing NetSlink across the country. I know you guys are in multiple states as well, and that that can be challenging dealing with different governments and different states and different municipalities within those states.
Yeah, I mean, as you kind of touched on there, Charles, it really is highly local, these issues, and all the way down to what kind of infrastructure makes sense in a particular community is driven by the needs and wants of that particular community. We have engaged with partners as large as the federal government through the CAF and RDOF programs for, you know, with multi-state efforts at deployments, all the way down to a single township or a single school. And it really, I think the way to summarize it really is there's no one size fits all approach to figuring out partnerships. It's just, you have to start with a stance of being open to it, and to, as really, as you said, to showing up and listening first, and that can give you a lot of insight into how you need to best address whatever the situation on the ground is there. So for example, if you're deploying fiber, mm-hmm. Does the municipality own its own poles? What's the right of way look like if you're talking about permitting? Do they know where their underground water and sewer infrastructure is? All of those things you really don't know until you have that conversation. And over the course of the past several years, funding has been a big issue, particularly in rural areas. So trying to understand what the community is maybe looking to get out of the ARPA dollars that they may have had, or what kind of technology they're looking to support at the state level for state level funding, all of those things need to start with a conversation, and that's why that kind of local engagement is so important.
Awesome. Well, you touched on some of the federal and state programs. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit how you guys, and you know, I'm not asking you to give away trade secrets here, but talk to us a little bit about how you guys utilize these programs to in your growth strategies.
No, absolutely. It's like I said, broadband infrastructure is pretty capital intensive, and trying to, so I think a key piece in the toolkit for rural service providers necessarily has to be understanding the government funding and regulatory landscape. That's been pretty critical over the course of the past several years with programs like the American Rescue Plan, Capital Projects Fund, now with BEAD on the horizon. There's really been a concerted effort by government to push tax dollars towards ensuring that folks in these communities have adequate broadband service. And those kind of partnerships, like I said earlier, really depend on engagement and on a conversation. Take, for example, our engagement with Wise County, Texas. They had used a good chunk of their ARPA dollars for a variety of different purposes. A lot of rural counties will use them for roads and bridges and non-broadband infrastructure improvements. But they had $1.3 million left over, and we went to them and said, hey, how about we take $1.3 million of our private capital, we'll match it with your ARPA funds, and we'll get connectivity up to 500 megabits down, 100 megabits up across 95% of the county. And the county executive there thought that was a great idea. We executed on that within a matter of months. And now if you take a look at the FCC's broadband map, Wise County, Texas is better connected than a much more urban Dallas County right next door. So that's just a sense of what a forward-thinking local government can accomplish in partnership with a service provider that's really willing to engage and really has the goal of connecting those folks who are the hardest to connect.
Yeah, that's fantastic. There's one thing in deploying fiber or fixed wireless or whatever the tool is for the job. There's one thing to deploy it. There's a complete different strategy in getting people connected. Getting that line to that house. As we know, ACP ended earlier this year. How is NextLink addressing affordability for low-income families and economically disadvantaged households that in the areas that you guys serve?
Yeah, great question. A lot of it just has to do with the way we price our services organically. We try to take into account the needs of the community when we're trying to figure out what kind of pricing needs to work there. For ACP in particular, we were sad to see that go away. And while it really wasn't sustainable to try to cover the cost of that long term, kind of goes back to rural infrastructure and rural services hard. We did provide a several month transition period for folks to try to at least ease the loss of the subsidy, where we would provide basically a 6 month glide path back to regular pricing for the service for folks who had previously qualified for ACP, and that's how we dealt with that particular situation. I know that there's some legislation that continues to get introduced to potentially bring ACP back. There's some interesting studies out there that have looked at what the impact has been for the loss of ACP on broadband adoption. But I think it all comes back down to, really, like I said at the outset, you've got to meet people and meet communities where they are. And that's definitely something that we try our best to do.
So, and we only have a few more minutes left here, but I got a couple more questions I want to touch on.
Sure.
And you talked about it a little bit. As you guys look at specific areas to deploy, and talk to us a little bit about your technology approach, whether that's using fix, whether that's fiber, whether that's a hybrid build, or anything else unique that you guys may do.
Yeah, I think the more tools you have in the toolkit to address connectivity issues, the better. And that's why we are very happy to utilize either fiber or fixed wireless to be able to use whatever makes sense for that particular community. Historically, NextLink really got its start by providing high-speed fixed wireless connectivity to small rural school districts in Texas. And then once we were able to connect the school, then we would put a tower in the community and then service the community using that tower that would serve the school with high-speed broadband. That's one approach. Typically, where there's more density and proximity to middle mile fiber, we'll do fiber to the home. But again, that may not work out just because a community is really, really rural and there's insufficient backhaul to get back to the internet. But again, kind of in the vein of using multiple tools in the toolkit, sometimes if there's a development that really, really wants fiber to the home, we'll do fiber to the home, but then we'll backhaul it with wireless back to the nearest fiber pop. So it really kind of goes back to you really got to look at what the situation on the ground is in terms of what the community wants and needs. The geography, the terrain, any number of different factors that may impact the viability of that deployment. And that tends to drive what the technology selection is.
Awesome. Well, again, not to give away any trade secrets here, but how does NextLink measure success in terms of closing the digital divide?
Sure. I mean, we have a number of KPIs that we track from a whole host of different data sets, right? I think the simple answer is we able, you know, through a number of our partnerships, whether they're you know, funded or not, we have obligations to deploy to a certain number of households and businesses in those communities. So once we get the infrastructure live, then that KPI is hit. But as you kind of alluded to earlier in the conversation, that's just the start, right? The ultimate goal is to get people connected, and once connected, to be able to utilize that service to its potential. So that's where our metrics like take rate in that community come in. How many households are there versus how many households are actually subscribing to our service? And then one that's a little bit more intangible is, does the community actually understand the service and have the digital literacy to be able to utilize it? And that has been, and that goal has really driven our efforts to start standing up what we call digital empowerment centers in various places across our footprint. These are, we've launched our first one in Seward, Nebraska, which aims to provide in-person hands-on digital training for folks who may need some help in terms of accessing the technology to fully utilize the internet once they're connected. But really, it's a multi-prong approach, and without any one of those prongs, I don't think we can fully claim success.
Well, see, this is why I like talking to you, because that was going to be my next question.
No.
After you get hooked up. I think that's
fantastic.
Try
not to steal your questions from you here, Charles.
No, I think it's fantastic that you guys are kind of looking beyond just the connectivity, right? In many of these areas, people are actually getting online for the first time. And, you know, what do we do with it? Why is it important for us to have it? And we always talked about the quality of life. And I think what you guys are doing in that program is awesome. Let's look ahead a little bit here, now that we're just about out of time here. Over the next 3 to 5 years, tell us what some of NextLink's key goals are, milestones that you're looking at in your rural deployments.
Sure. It's pretty straightforward for some of our funded deployments, right? Like, as I mentioned earlier, it's meeting our obligations. That means we close out our Connected America Fund, or CAF, deployments this year. We're on the clock by the end of 2025 to finish those out. We're well on track to do so, and have already clipped off several states, but there's still a couple more to finish up. Same thing for our RDOF. We have more time on that one. And so those are a lot of the key deployment metrics that we're tracking is just, are we meeting our obligations, and are we meeting the needs of the communities that we're looking to serve? I will say it's, you say 3 to 5 years, you look back 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And man, who would have predicted COVID and the incredible work from home expansion that has really driven, you know, incredible broadband adoption over the course of the past 5 years? Mm-hmm. Trying to predict the future that far out is a challenging one. So I think from my vantage point, it's just about making sure that we are nimble enough and flexible enough to be able to accomplish the goals that we have, while being able to shift in the case of any sort of unanticipated market pressures or developments in the space. You know, I think there has been you know, a fair amount of uncertainty in the marketplace as it relates to interest rates, to tariffs, to BEAD funding. You know, pick your poison, and being able to confidently invest in rural and hard to reach areas with that level of you know, potential uncertainty is sure. keeps my job interesting and fulfilling for sure.
Definitely keeps you employed, right?
It does. Fingers crossed. I'm still here.
Before we wrap up today's episode, let's talk a little bit about our new sponsor, AGL Information and Technology. If you're passionate about broadband, tech innovation, infrastructure, and how federal programs are reshaping the digital landscape, AGL Information and Technology is your essential resource. Each week, AGL InfoTech brings you deep insights, timely news, and expert perspective on the front lines of digital transformation. Explore the latest articles on broadband advancements, AI applications, and strategies for navigating the evolving tech ecosystem, all with one goal, empowering you with knowledge. Ready to stay informed and inspired? Visit aglinfotech.com and be part of the conversation that's shaping the future.
Still at Mexico. So.
I'm going to squeeze in one more real quick question. Since you brought that up, how challenging is it to keep up with all of the, and I'll just call them legislative shifts that we've seen over the last 12 months?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, a couple decades ago, in an economics class, you know, I had heard that uncertainty really was not good for business. And at the time, as a youngster, I didn't really understand what that meant. But now, sitting in this job, trying to forecast things like personnel, things like capital, things like supply chain, when you have a significant amount of uncertainty as to what tomorrow is going to bring, it just makes it challenging. And I think it's then somewhat human nature to pull back a little bit and retrench and go back to what's comfortable. I think the challenge is with our goal of really truly closing the digital divide that we really can't retrench from that. That's our mission as an organization. And so then it's okay. This is what we're living with. How do we get it done? How do we complete the job in the face of uncertainty? And figure out a way to actually make that uncertainty an advantage. I'll let you know once I've figured that out 100%. But that's kind of how I'm thinking about things.
Well, and around here, I'll share with you. We use the mantra: get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Because you just don't know. Claude, this has been awesome. I so appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. Share with our audience a little bit about how they can find out about a little more about NextLink, what you guys are doing, what you're doing in the communities, and the areas that you're serving.
Yeah, no, I as with a digital company, the best way to figure out who we are and what we're doing is to go to our website, which is nextlinkinternet.com. And that'll, if you have some time, you can go down any number of rabbit holes that tell you what we're up to in any variety of contexts.
All right. Well, thank you, sir, for joining us today. We look forward to hearing more. Well, you know, I say we look forward to hearing it. We can't help but from hearing it. You guys are so dynamic in the industry. You're always out there, and we appreciate all your efforts. Appreciate you being here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it.